Hey guys, this is CTP with Barbell Shrug. For the video version of all these podcasts, go to our website, fitter.tv. That's FITR.TV. Check out the video version of all of them. They're a lot cooler. They're super juicy and tasty.
But what's on topic for today?
If you're a dad who doesn't allow his kid to eat donuts, you're a fucking asshole. You gotta have at least one day a week where you can have a donut, man. Yeah.
Did you see any of the clean ladder?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So those guys were just killing
it. Dude, 335 got you like 12th place.
Yeah.
Well, the guy,
wow.
The tall, is it? He had the little bit of ponytail, taller guy. He cleaned 360.
Asia Barto.
I was super impressed with him. Super impressed with the first guy to go, that guy from Peru. He looked like a weightlifter.
Yeah, he was actually.
So I was telling, I was talking about this morning with Scott. I'm like, here you go. You ran a marathon 2 days before. You've done two or three wads before this today. And now you've gone from 100 kilos to, I won't do the conversion. I want to seem like I'm not that bad at math because I am, but up to 365 pounds.
Right.
In about 30 seconds between those lifts or so.
25 seconds.
25 seconds between those lifts. And then you hit a lift that would, you know, if you're a 200-pound guy and you can clean and jerk double body weight, you'd be a national-level weightlifter in the States.
Yep.
So I was pretty impressed with their performance, man. This is the first year I'm pretty blown away by those guys who are competing in the games. I thought it was fantastic.
Well, Everett said it best yesterday. Somebody was like, Josh Everett's the announcer, and he's been a games competitor for a long time, and he's just kind of...
I thought he was out of the circle, but I guess
he is. But he's still involved with commentating and all that. He's still involved in the sport. Mm-hmm. But they were like, you know, two times, or he's the only person to ever reach the podium twice, or one of two athletes to do that. Mm-hmm. Other than Rich, I think. And he was like, yeah, well, back then I was a big fish in a very, very small pond. Like, now the pond is so damn big, mm-hmm, that cleaning 335 or 345 gets you 12th place in a ladder. Like, holy shit. Back then, like,
if you clean 275, you're probably a monster.
Yeah, like, it's unreal now, you know. I'll tell you, the most impressive lifter out there to me, and it wasn't pretty, was Marcus Henderson, though. He power cleaned 355.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 365 missed just because he couldn't squat under it. He powered 355. Wow. Like, wow. The football, like, feet landing 2 feet outside of shoulder width.
But still, it takes a lot of power to do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Unreal.
Did you see?
Huh?
Is he a big guy or is he?
He's pretty big. I think he's a little over 200.
Still not that big.
I wonder if he knows how easy his life would be if he learned how to actually do the movement
just
correctly.
Bend his knees?
Yeah.
I mean,
he would be like, wow, this
probably,
is really easy,
but,
actually.
You know, he played football and you're fighting years and years of that training.
Yeah, and I was happy to see actually very little of that. The girls still do it probably more. They do like the ultra wide stance sumo catches on their snatches and cleans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you could just drop. I mean, you used to drop, and you do deep squats. You do all these bounding stuff. You can probably pick that up pretty quick if you just work on it.
It does get better every year. Every year, everyone's technique
gets better. I'm really impressed
with
it. You can really see a difference, even with the program between last year and this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really fantastic what they've done. I mean, this is a super friggin' hard test.
I'm glad they did the try and then gave them a day of rest. Like, it's going to take more than just 3 days to run you into the ground to test every aspect. You know, and they're using all their resources now to actually do that, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm pretty pleased with it. I mean, it's a pretty gnarly. There's still, I had this discussion with somebody else. It's still kind of, I don't know if I want to call it full on sport, but it's a gnarly, in the sense of the word gnarly, test of overall fitness and ability, man.
Yep.
I mean, it's way beyond any other marathon, triathlon. It's everything I could think of. It really combined into one now. It's a high level weightlifting activity. It's a really solid triathlon activity. It's a good mix.
Fun to watch, man.
You're a fit bastard if you win this thing.
One last
which
thing
is gonna be thrown in
Central East. Did you see the top 10 men right now?
Yeah,
five of them are from Central East.
Yeah, I saw that. It's ridiculous.
We should move to one of the shittier regions and get you into games.
Yeah,
like one or two are Rich Froning and Dan Bailey in the region. So I don't know what you're gonna do about that, right? That they took one and two, didn't they?
In my region,
yeah,
yeah.
Two. And Dan's done pretty good, man.
He's six right now.
Oh yeah, six, and that he just reminded me, he gassed on a football sled activity. I thought that was an awesome event.
Yeah,
Did you catch any of that? Andy? Have you seen any of this stuff?
No, I was. So they had to do a little occupied the last few days.
Looked like a CrossFit football. Yeah, they did. It was a 200-yard, 300-yard shuttle. They sprint 50 back, sprint 100 back. They give them a minute to rest. You do a rope ladder, back down, and you push a 280-pound football sled.
Oh, jeez.
A real football sled, one-on-one football sled for 20 yards. Go back, rope climb, push another 20, run back. So you got to do a total of 100-yard push with a 300-pound sled. And those guys, everybody rolled over and hit the angel wing position.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
Yeah, everyone was walking in between sets. Like, it was just, they were smoked.
Again, Matt Channel, Matt, did an amazing job.
Yeah, he picked it up and walked with it.
He's been impressive.
I've seen a lot of guys hit that position minus the rope pulls, minus the sled pushing. So
on a gasser?
Just with a couple of gassers back and forth. I've seen a lot of guys go down in my day. So.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's kind of officially start this episode. Mike's in Vegas for his little brother's 21st birthday, so he may or may not be alive at this point. So he's gone for a couple of days. So we're hosting Andy Galpin. We got a lot of history with Andy. Went to college together, grad school, and now he's gone on and got his PhD and is a professor down at Cal State.
Cal State Fullerton. I will not.
McGoldrick shaking his head in disbelief.
I will not respond to any questions if I'm not addressed as Dr. Galpin. Or also Dr. Awesome would be fine.
All right, so Andy, go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background for sport and academics.
Sure. Well, kind of as you mentioned, obviously Doug and I pretty much grew up together. We met in college, went to a small school in Oregon called Linfield College. Got our undergraduate degrees in exercise science. Both played football at the time, so we had that background. Actually, it's kind of a funny story how we both ended up in Memphis, too, which was a bit random. I remember I got accepted to do my graduate work and my master's at Memphis, and I was driving out, and I was somewhere in the middle of Wyoming, which, if you guys ever had the chance to drive through Wyoming,
it's fantastic.
Enjoy it. And I remember
there's
I got a phone call.
Nothing in that state.
No. Nothing.
If you run out of gas, you're just done, huh?
I remember going through like the biggest, I don't remember even what it is, like one of the biggest towns, and it was like smaller than driving through Jackson, Tennessee.
Right, yeah. It was one of the longest 12 hours of my life.
Yeah.
But I remember I was halfway through or something, and I got a call from Doug, and I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm on my way out to Memphis." He's like, "What?" Yeah, and he's like, "Me too." I'm like, "Really? Well, that's crazy." Yeah, so we were both heading out to move to Memphis. So
kind of independently decided to go to grad school in Memphis, hadn't talked to each other in months.
Yeah, and we're both from the Northwest, had nothing to do.
That's
just kind
that's
of
odd.
Wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's destiny right there.
Yeah, so I ended up.
It was meant to be.
I'm still trying to figure out where Wyoming is.
What country is that?
Yeah. So we ended up out here. Obviously got a master's in, I guess they call it, human movement science. And
whatever, who's.
It's whatever. It's all the same
muscle
thing.
I tell people kinesiology because they go, "Whoa, what is that?"
Yeah, like, yeah.
I don't know, smart stuff.
Sports science always sounds a bit meatheadish, doesn't it? Like, I studied sports science.
Yeah, it's all just...
The science of getting
really,
huge.
Really? How much science is involved with these?
If you guys really understood the debates that go on between naming those degrees, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. They're like fist fights of, no, let's call it human movement science. No, it needs to be kinesiology. No, it needs to be... Like, oh, my God.
I'll be in my lab when you jerks get through talking.
yeah. So we came out here. While we're out here, we got a chance to work with one of your guys' former podcast guests, Brian Schilling.
Mm-hmm.
So we started picking up weightlifting. So we started training, competing in that since I couldn't compete in football anymore. Finished up here, moved on to get my doctorate. And now you guys want to be super impressed? Check this out. My doctorate is actually in human bioenergetics.
Boom. It's a lot of big words.
Yeah. I know.
It took you turn humans into fuel.
You actually spend your you actually spend your
Soylent Green. It's people.
Grass-fed babies.
You actually spend your first year there just learning what the hell that means.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't.
Wait, so what does it mean? Did you learn that in the whole span of being?
No, actually I didn't. Still don't know. It's a fancy-dancy word for just kind of saying muscle metabolism, muscle physiology, understanding really how muscle utilizes fuel, things like that, how muscle really grows.
Mm-hmm. You'd call yourself a muscle expert of sorts now, right?
You could say that. I tell the girls that. No question. So we did that. Still training, competing, weightlifting. Picked up a little bit of jiu-jitsu and stuff like that in the meantime just to have a little fun. But finished up there and then moved out to...
I'd give you some more credit than that. I'd call you more of a mini Joe Rogan.
Basically.
Quite not. I mean, if Joe Rogan quits that gig, I expect you to apply.
You do have two of the coolest flying arm bars to your credit that I've seen.
Yeah, back to back, actually, which is... Even, and it's funny because I have never even attempted
Chris,
that.
Chris, can we edit in some of those flying arm bars off YouTube? We definitely will.
Yeah, it's funny because I did that tournament and I walked out and I said, I'm going to go fly an arm bar. And the guy that coached me was like, what? I've never tried it before. I didn't really even know how it kind of worked.
Like, I'm feeling it today.
And the guy just reached out and grabbed my lapel and I was like, you got to be. And before I even knew it, I was flying through the air and he was hitting my arm as we were flying down. And then he got up again for the next one. And a guy reached out and grabbed my lapel again, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I kind of like pump faked it, thinking like,
broke, don't fix it.
Thinking he saw the first one. He was maybe like setting me up to try to like, you know, make me land on my head or something.
The pump fake. Yeah.
And so I went like that, and he didn't move. And I was like, you absolutely have to be kidding me. So I did it again. So I had two flying arm bars in under like 7 seconds total. And then I retired, and I haven't done jiu-jitsu in a year. So
I haven't seen anybody pull off one of those in a long time.
No.
That's a rare bird.
Yeah, it's a little easier if you have a gi on. I don't watch a whole lot of gi tournaments, really.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, put it that way.
Yeah.
We had the discussion the other day with Hart and colleagues about entering like a Naga tournament and making the deal ahead of time that we would only finish bouts with WWF moves. Like, you'd have to figure for a guy to win. You could not, even if the guy gave you a try, you had to get in the position to camel clutch him, or you cannot
Boston
win.
Crab all the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah, because that would actually work, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it definitely would. It hurts like
kind of hard to pull off, but kind that'd be illegal. Pretty epic. Yeah. You win every one of the six rounds and get gold by Boston crabbing a guy. That'd be so fantastic.
Yeah,
probably not as good as the arm bars.
You need cooler names for their moves. Like Boston crab sounds like it hurts.
Right,
camel
exactly.
Clutch is, camel clutch is one of the better ones.
Well, man. I guess if you use the Portuguese language, it does sound. It's like Garagatame. You're like, ooh, that sounds crazy.
Yeah,
but then you just translate it, you're like arm triangle. Oh, that's not so
arm Boston crab. You can think it's really gonna hurt, or
it's kind of like an Italian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not really
right.
Sure which yet.
Like, am I gonna pay for that?
Yeah, how much does that cost?
Yeah,
it's a romantic language. Even if you say like diarrhea in Italian, it sounds romantic and beautiful.
Right, exactly.
Wait, so you competed in weightlifting for a couple of years there in graduate school and did pretty well?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I was able to qualify for national championships in, help me out here, was it 2008?
Maybe?
Yeah, I think maybe something like that. Yeah. So that was fun. So actually really my first year.
Is that the year we went to Birmingham?
No, well,
what was that?
That was the year. I guess I should preface that my first ever meet outside of, like, in front of you guys, was the American Open, which was down in Birmingham.
Okay, yeah, that's
and
we
as anybody truly experiences in their first ever competition of a sport they've never done before, it was the most utterly catastrophic failure in the history of mankind.
Did you bomb?
I walked up, and not only did I bomb, but I barely even moved the barbell. So the snatch was absolutely ridiculous. I almost killed myself in warm-ups because it was the first time I touched a competition bar. Mm. So the first pull I went to do with like 60 keys, I threw over my head and about ripped my shoulder in half, and I was like, oh my gosh. And from there, it was just an utter tank. down. Just 0-3, and then I went to... I was like, well, we already drove down here. Let's go ahead and do the clean and jerks anyways, even though I'm technically out.
Right.
And I think I was opening at 125 or something, and I had about 110 in the bar and couldn't get it off the floor. Couldn't get it off the floor. Finally caught
did
it
you
once.
Did you cut for that
buried.
Meat, dude?
Yeah, I cut some weight
maybe
for that
cut
meat.
Too much or something?
That and didn't
just have, just being nervous as shit?
Yeah, had no idea. I didn't understand the time thing. I didn't understand that you got, like, you had to tell them what weight you were going to do and things like that. I just kind of thought you kind of walked up and... When whoever's next on the bar, you went, and so that thing threw me off. I had to miss, and then follow myself back to back to back, and I was just a
tanked
wreck. So, but after that, actually, we were able to hit the numbers to qualify for national championships and go up there and up to Columbus, the Arnold. It was a great experience. They didn't do as fun as we did.
Doug, did you lift in that meet too, dude?
Not at the national championships. Okay. I lived at the Arnold before.
Yeah, that
the year before 2007.
You dropped a snatch on your head or something, didn't you?
I dropped a clean on my head. I dropped
right.
130 kilos on my head.
It's on YouTube, isn't it?
287. Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah, I dropped it right on the front of my head, and then I went back out a minute later. I had to follow myself again and stuck it. Same thing, though. Like, we didn't have like the nicest bars. Our bars weren't bad in graduate school, but we didn't have like solid like illegal bars.
Solid York bars. Yeah. I love those bars. But yeah, they don't spin.
They're
really
good enough, but
yeah.
But every time I went to a competition, it just feels a little bit different. And I went to do the jerk, and it rolled really easy forward, and then I overcompensated, and it rolled really fast backward, and I dropped it right on my head.
Yeah.
So maybe we can edit that one in, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Actually, on a quick side note, that has nothing to do with, but I actually just played around with the new DHS bars.
Oh, yeah.
They're about half the price of the Alico competition bars, yeah. And they are
fantastic,
fabulous. If you're in the mood or market for a barbell, I wouldn't waste your money on the Alico stuff anymore. The DHSs are great.
Yeah.
But
people are catching up with the quality.
Yeah, and it just doesn't matter as much. I mean, it's like, in the end of the day, it's like there's a bar and some rubber plate. You need to pick that up over your head.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know. So,
and like I said, if you're not going for, you're not training for national championships or something, you just need a good set to train with and to build your CrossFit skills, whatever. I really like everything that Rogue produces, man.
Oh yeah,
I mean, Rogue, fantastic. Between Rogue and what Penlay puts out, I don't think you need anything else. And I really like how Rogue makes like 45 different kinds of bars,
right?
And some are just different by color. I think it's so awesome. They really put a whole lot of focus on crafting and making love to the design of the barbells. They just worship the barbell.
They even make PVC pipe training bars now.
Yeah, I mean, they make 100 different kinds of everything.
It's got knurls on it and everything.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, really?
If you propose...
I haven't seen it yet.
Anybody watching the games knows you can propose anything to, I guess, Bill and the Rogue team, and they're going to make it, and it's going to look awesome. They made these football sleds for the games.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the big bobsled?
They made a big bobsled. It's a six-man prowler.
750-pound prowler.
Unbelievable.
There's a handle for six people. You all push it. Gnarly.
Well, it's actually cool. The very first purchase I had in my new lab was a bunch of stuff from Rogue. Bought some stuff out there.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're taking over.
Yeah.
Super service,
really noticed
super
was
cool.
When we were at the Arnold, and like even all like the bodybuilding booths had Rogue stuff, and I was like, those guys are taking over.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, then they
it's nice to have products made by people that
they
train.
Supplied the whale to me too, didn't they?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. At least the warm up room was all Rogue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a video of Misha doing like a 750-pound back squat back there with the Rogue equipment. It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
The Russian.
So just a few days ago, you were presenting at the National Strength Conditioning Conference on muscle and fiber types. Is that right?
Yeah, that was actually just about 12 hours ago.
Okay.
maybe a little more. But I was fortunate. I got asked to fly to the National Strength and Conditioning Association at their annual conference, which happened to be in Providence, which on a side note, fantastically terrible idea to put a conference in Providence, Rhode Island. But
why would they choose? Oh, yeah. That seems so crazy. Two years in a row was in Vegas, right?
It goes to Vegas every other year because the numbers triple when they go to Vegas. But
Rhode Island.
I like the city, honestly, but for me, coming from Southern California, it was a $900 plane ride, which I didn't have, but anyways, and it's 3-hour time difference, so a 7 a.m. meeting was a 4 a.m. It was just a terrible, and people from the West don't want to go. Anyways, so I was out there. It was really, really good. They wanted me to talk about skeletal muscle fiber types, kind of what they actually are, what that means for performance stuff, and then how they actually are regulated and how they change with
they haven't rehashed training. That enough like to death over the years.
Well, it's actually funny. That's the exact I'm glad you said that. Thank you for leading me in, Chris.
You're welcome, buddy.
Because that's the exact conversation, and actually the data is unbelievably clear but still debated because of the comments like that. The data, it's just the information's data wise is out there, but it's not getting across to people. For some reason, people aren't seeing the data, and so there's really no debate. It's really close case, but yet people are still writing textbooks in the very, very wrong.
Okay, so let's back up. So what's closed case exactly, and how does this apply to people that actually train in the real world?
For the listener, Andy.
Yeah,
for
so
the listener.
Essentially, there's if you were to look and if you just put in the interwebs or the Googles,
yeah,
what are muscle fiber types?
Okay.
You're going to see, obviously, people talk about quick twitch or fast twitch muscle fiber types, and you'll talk about slow twitch fiber types. And the debate really comes in is, do they change? So can, say, for instance, if you did a lot of heavy strength training or weightlifting, can you get more fast fiber types? And inversely, if you do
slow ones turn into fast ones?
Yeah, sorry, excuse me. Yeah. Okay. Will the slow ones transition themselves to become a fast? And then the inverse, if you do a lot of endurance training, will your fast fiber...
Well, because there is this wide gradient you see as well, right? When you do these procedures and you stay in for them, you see sort of these in-between things, right?
Yeah, and so exactly what happens is if you use these old methodologies, when you figure out if a fiber is fast or slow, The fast ones turn white, slow ones turn black. You literally just stain it. Mm-hmm. Well, then there's also like a shades of gray in between. And so you kind of have to just arbitrarily be like, well, that one's kind of dark, so I'll call it black. And that one's
I sat around in my living room for like 3 days with a counter and slides when you're counting fucking fiber types Dr. Fry. Going, yeah. Pretty gray, bro, click. Pretty gray, click. Yeah. That one's pretty gray, click.
Right.
Oh, 4,000 grays.
And so the problem is when you try to figure out and they do a study to see, okay, are these types changing? Mm-hmm. You're still in this arbitrary gray because you might have gone from gray to a little bit grayer and you're still calling it gray. Mm-hmm. So actually with the new methodologies and the stuff that I do where you actually take a fiber one by one, figure out the type, it's actually extremely clear that basically the way that shakes down is you have a slow fiber, you have a fast fiber, and then you have these mega fast Lamborghini fibers.
Mm-hmm. Which I have none of.
Well, you're not the only one. Matter of fact, we actually don't see anybody with them. We've done...
Oh, shit. You just blew my mind.
No trained people, you mean?
No, nobody.
Nobody at all?
Nobody. Okay. We can't... The only people we've seen with these Lamborghini fibers are people that have really, like, had a nerve cut for, like, a decade. Mm. Like, completely lost innervation. So we don't really ever find these fibers. The point is, we don't really have any idea what's happening with these mega fast. And then, of course, we studied a world champion sprinter. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you the results of that one, but
top secret.
It's coming out very soon.
Okay.
So something is going on with really fast, really strong people that's very different from everything.
Dun dun dun.
Radioactive spider bites?
Perhaps. So actually, even
to back up a little bit further, sure. For people that don't have any anatomy or physiology background, so your muscle's kind of like a big ponytail, and each strand of hair is its own individual fiber.
Yeah, that's
a cell.
Each strand of hair, so to speak, can be fast or slow or something in between.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great actual analogy. That's a good one. I'll probably steal that. But
thank you.
The way
yeah, no problem.
The way I think about it is
your muscles like a ponytail.
I was waiting for someone to explain it to me in Spider-Man terms.
The way I think of it is being a cable, and so you've got a bunch of different. Your muscle is one
ponytail's
big,
not cool enough. Don't pout.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so cable, cool.
So you've got a bunch of, and you've got really several thousands and hundreds of thousands of individual fibers, and each one of the fibers is different, fast, slow, and things like that. So what's traditionally taught is the amount of fast and slow you have is fixed. You're not going to change. And so what you hear people talk about when you do heavy strength training or very fast training is all the adaptation is coming from the neurological system. Mm-hmm. Central nervous system, it's all these neurological adaptations. And of course, that's very true. But muscle is adapting very much.
Wait, so actually, let's back up a little further. So what's a neurological adaptation? What does that mean?
So again, this is the thing you'll hear people talk about with strength training is it's not a muscle thing, it's a nerve. All right, so you're training your nervous system to recruit more muscle fibers, more of the nerve. You'll recruit in a better sequence. You'll be better coordinated with the muscles you're activating for that particular movement.
So again, so that's still, if you have no muscle background, it sounds like a bunch of gibberish, right? Is that right? So what does that mean, really? You have muscle fibers that contract, and when a muscle fiber contracts, it contracts maximally, 100%, every single time, right?
Right.
So if you're contracting your muscle, basically you're having one muscle fiber contract at max force, and then another one next to it contracts, and they all kind of contract sporadically. And then you get a smooth muscle contraction.
And so the only way to improve the amount of strength you use is to learn to turn more of those fibers on. Because they're not all turned on every time you do a muscle action.
Right. So instead of just one pulling, 100 of them pull at the same time.
So say, for instance, you've got 100, say you've got 100 muscle fibers in your leg and you're doing a very heavy squat. You may actually only turn on 50 of them. And so one of the ways you get stronger is you learn to turn on maybe now 60 or 70 of them. And so you're actually able to produce more force or more strength.
And then then on top of that, they all kind of contract in the same sequence, the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one, kind of. And then if you can get them to pool together where instead of being one and then a second later, the next one, and then a second later, the next one, if you can make it a half a second in between, the first one and then the second one right away, and then the third one right away, then they're all pulling closer to being at the same time is an easy way to think about
it. And that's absolutely, I mean, that's that's, yeah, perfect.
Some of that scientifically shaky, like about exactly how that happens, but whatever. But that's kind of how
the ponytail part was a little shaky.
Yeah, not the point. But again, if you look around, and you'll always hear, and even in the CrossFit stuff, you guys will always hear that stuff. People talk about central nervous system training and things like that. And again, and that's what they're saying is those type of adaptations.
That's how people can get stronger without getting bigger.
Right, exactly.
You don't only need more muscle to get stronger.
It's why now I like to think of, I really like Glenn Penlay's term for training. He calls it, you know, we had a good practice today. I mean, practice shooting baskets, practice knife work if you're a chef, compared to practicing heavy snatches. The only way to get good at catching 200 kilos over your head is to try that. Doing 100 kilos 800 times is not going to prepare you for the specific skill that is catching a max one. So that's practice. It's not necessarily, I view it less as like I'm training to get to that point. It's like I have to prepare and train and practice at doing that thing.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be a whole lot more demanding on your nervous system and everything else than any other, even a 90% lift. So practice. So,
there you go. Yep. See you, buddy.
Right. And exactly. And that's, I use the exact same term. I call it practice as well.
Yeah.
Because again, being strong is a skill. There's very, very, very skill component to being strong. And that's,
you thought that was one of your chapters in Simple Strength, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Strength as a skill.
Simple Strength, available at fitter.tv. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go train ponytails.
Excellent.
Yeah, bro.
See you, dude.
So Dr. Galpin, do you think you can change your fiber types?
Yeah.
The loaded question.
That's and then what we see is actually if you use the proper methodologies, which have been around since the early 90s, surprisingly, every single research study has shown these fiber types do indeed change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a question. There's no debate.
Every fiber type can change?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So, for instance, if you have, say you're born with a lot of the fast ones.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a lot of very slow, very endurance type of training, those fast fibers will be gone and transferred into slow fibers.
Wow.
That's not to say that that's a bad thing. But that's the transition that's going to happen. Likewise, if you're very, very slow and you train to be very strong and very fast, those slow fibers will make themselves and be converted into faster fibers. And so the point being, muscle can also get faster and stronger without necessarily just getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you're able to, again, that's another explanation of why you can get strong without and fast without getting bigger, because the muscle will change into a faster fiber type without necessarily getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what the talk was about. I gave it to coaches, and so it wasn't for the research group. They were there, but I wanted to get the information to the coaches because a lot of people have that idea that, hey, I'm slow. That's what I'm there, and it's absolutely not true. If you continue to train slow, then, yeah, you will definitely be very slow.
Well, if you make excuses for being fat and slow, you're always going to be fat and slow.
Right, and if you focus on the wrong types of training thing and you spend too much time doing very high volumes and very much conditioning, you will lose your ability to be fast. Because you're going to lose those fiber types.
You're talking about 100% max full speed. If you're trying to improve your 40-yard dash, then you probably don't need to do a whole lot of even moderate volume training. You need to do 100% full speed sprints.
Right.
And never really do anything that's over a mile.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like we used to do for college football conditioning at the beginning of every summer. You know, because it builds a good base for your training.
Yeah,
it's crazy how many people still do stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember actually the best...
Lineman running miles.
The best player Doug
wearing their bodies out.
Yeah, the best player Doug and I played with was an amazing safety that he refused to do any weightlifting. Ray Lyons, if you remember.
Yeah.
He refused because he was convinced it didn't make you any faster. And he knew he was going to have to play a lot because he was so good and he was never going to come out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So he just spent the whole offseason doing miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. And he came in for his senior year and was probably three times the slowest he'd ever been in his life. Didn't get tired, but was really slow.
Oh, man.
And it was just a really unfortunate thing. So it's something to keep in mind really for coaches and stuff out there that you got to really pay attention to your training. If you're needing to get faster, needing to get strong, you really need to be cautious about doing really highly endurance and really highly aerobically based movements because it's going to cost you at the level of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to lose some stuff there. So
I feel like it's a bummer when really good players like Ray do stuff like that, and then everyone else just sees Ray, who's an awesome athlete no matter what.
Right.
And they go, well, that's what Ray does. I'll do what Ray does. And they didn't look to see if he got better.
Right.
They just look to see who he is.
Well, it's what everybody falls into when they see any famous athlete training.
Yeah.
That guy hit a tire with a sledgehammer 1,000 times. I'll do that. I'll train how Fedor trains. That'll be Fedor. Right. It's like that's like one of the key logical fallacies in training. It's like, I'll do as he does to become him.
Yeah.
Right.
It's never going to happen.
They have a term
for that. Guess what? You're not Fedor. You don't have any of his characteristics in your body or mind.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're talking about fiber types and staining them and whatnot. So how do you get a hold of muscle to stain?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do actually is in order to study muscle, you have to steal muscle. Mm-hmm. And so
well put.
we call it investing in science.
Okay.
So you have to take a biopsy. Mm-hmm. And so essentially what that is it's a needle that looks like a pen, and it looks like a 1900s or 17th century torture device. It's pretty awesome looking. Mm-hmm. But it's actually really painless. I've probably had 36 on myself now.
Yeah.
I've done several thousand. But basically you just go in, you take a little chunk of muscle.
Yeah.
Pull it out, and then you're able to do whatever analysis that you want on it.
Might have some video tucked away of us getting biopsies.
We could probably find some on YouTube. They can.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll give you fair warning. If you look at it on YouTube, you're going to be like, "This guy is a liar. That looks terrible."
Yeah,
it looks horrendously awful. But to give an example, one of the projects that Doug and I worked on, that turned out to be my thesis as grad students, is we did a biopsy of the thigh, then we did 8 sets of 3 of a clean pull at 85%. And to kind of let you know, that's a very quad dominant movement. And we're able to do a biopsy and then do 8 sets of 3 to 85%. Oh, and then by the way, we did another biopsy, and then did 8 more sets of 3, and then did a third biopsy.
In the same hole, right?
In the same hole, yeah. And so it's really, we've done them on marathoners. We've done a soleus biopsy and then had people run a marathon.
Wow.
And then do another soleus. So yeah.
And in our case, we weren't allowed any anesthetic for the muscle.
No, we never do. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got a little topical anesthetic just for the incision that we had to make in the side of our thigh. And then as far as the muscle is concerned, there's nothing. They jab that big pen into your thigh.
Wait,
and
it sort of feels like a Charlie horse, right?
Give some suction and pulls the muscle into it, and then they just kind of chop off a piece of the muscle.
Exactly. Yeah. And really you don't feel the cutting or anything like that. You feel kind of like an awkward pressure. Again,
a lot of pressure.
There's pressure receptors in muscle, but technically there's no pain receptors. Mm-hmm. So you don't really feel it. You just feel, you're just like, yeah, I guess like someone's pressing kind of weird on your thigh for a second. And the second the needle's removed, you're like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, once they pull it out, it didn't hurt at all.
That's what she said.
Now, gosh, beat me to it. I've had several biopsies where I didn't even know.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, wow, I didn't even realize. I've had some that haven't gone so well, but mm-hmm. I've had 30, so it's going to happen. But in general, it's a pretty easy process, really.
Yeah.
So if you guys are ever given the opportunity, I wouldn't shy away from it. There's a lot of misinformation out there that it causes scar tissue and blah, 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 and you're in bed for a week and you're going to miss training.
What I wouldn't do is give a tendon biopsy.
Oh, boy, I'll support that.
That's not a good idea at all.
No.
I got the wool pulled over my eyes on that one time.
Yeah, as did I. It took me about a year.
Yeah, at least a year.
At least before I could put my knee on the ground.
I couldn't kneel down for a long time. Yeah.
And
we did patella tendon biopsies.
Yeah, needless to say, ligament, we have removed that study from our methodologies. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, thank you, coach.
Yeah. Yep. But the muscle stuff is super easy.
Yeah, I couldn't even kneel down on my bed for like a month.
Yeah.
Like on my mattress.
I'll tell you actually kind of a remotely funny story.
Made jiu-jitsu really hard.
No kidding. It's a funny story about biopsies. We were doing a project with some 80-year-old ladies, mm-hmm. and so we were cycle training them or something. Mm-hmm. And we kept, you know, we had to do a lot of biopsies, and we were really cautious. We're like, you know, you doing okay? How your leg feeling? You doing okay? And one of the ladies was getting annoyed. She was kind of like, look, I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. But you kind of have to be over, like, we are taking a piece of live tissue from you, so you're really cautious.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally looked up at us, and she's like, hey, I've had 9 children. I'm fine. It's like, oh, yeah, this probably isn't anywhere near that level.
Yeah, right.
But probably without any drugs, too.
I mean, because she's 80, so she probably didn't have the options back then. The whole lot.
And I've witnessed that done once. You know, Janie went 16 hours without drugs and to completion. And that was harder than any training, probably.
Yeah.
Harder than anything you're ever going to do training. Yeah. More pain than I'm ever going to feel, so hands off to the old lady. 9 of them. Wow.
I'm glad males don't give birth.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Want nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Also, yeah, support that. So.
All right, so you did some really cool stuff with looking at leg strength in relation to health and mortality.
Yeah,
and
actually. So
a
that's
bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, so it's actually not not in my work, but there's some some really convincing data about the importance of being really, really, really strong. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean your ability to move something one time as heavy as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really interesting stuff from a guy named Dr. Myers out of Stanford, and he looked at your VO2 max, which is essentially how the maximal ability of your heart to do work.
Mm-hmm.
How much oxygen can you bring in, mm-hmm. right? And what he saw was he looked at all these markers of health, cholesterol levels, blood pressure, if you had a history of heart attacks or your family had a history of heart attacks, and all these things that we classically get, like the classic physical. You go to a doctor, you get
mm-hmm.
a physical.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at all these things and he said, which one of these things actually predict mortality?
Mm-hmm.
And the only two things that stuck were your maximal, your VO2 max,
mm-hmm.
and this is a crazy one, your lifetime recreational activity.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, he also, one of the things he looked at was your lifetime occupation. So say, for instance, if you were a laborer, you know, and you had a really active job, that didn't cut it.
Hmm.
You had to do something for your life, recreation, for recreation. You had to be involved in activity or physical exercise of some kind. In addition, you had to have a very high VO2 max.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that was super interesting. And so he really laid the importance of doing things that train your VO2 max, doing things that make your heart challenge, doing things that make it go to its highest capacity. Well, then they went back and they looked at, well, what about leg strength? And mm-hmm. what they found was not only leg strength a significant predictor of how long you will live,
mm-hmm.
it was more significant than your VO2 max.
Oh,
so the number
wow.
one predictor of mortality is your leg strength. So it's really,
you
really
crazy.
You
wouldn't guess that, would you?
I mean, and you're literally like, you're comparing this to say, do you have a prior stroke? That was less significant than your maximal leg strength. Of predicting how long. And they also looked at it with chronic heart failure patients. And then again, they showed that when you come into a hospital, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
your likelihood of getting a good prognosis is directly correlated to your leg strength. For whatever reason. Those people that are stronger,
yeah,
not
well,
causal.
I guess you can, you know, you're going to get up sooner. You're going to recover sooner. You're going to not fall. You're going to, if your legs are strong, that means you worked your legs, means you're probably your cardiovascular system is trained.
Right.
And your nervous system is trained and you have good bone mineral density. Like
yeah.
It probably is linked to countless, countless important things.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's,
I know the biggest thing, if something happens to you, I guess
right.
your risk of death is inversely correlated, I guess, to the speed at which you get out of the fucking bed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Get up and move.
Yeah.
Or else
for
you're
independence
die.
And autonomy, leg strength's got to be huge.
Oh, yeah. No, it's absolutely out of the charts. And again, if you think about it, though, like, it's the most simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we start measuring cholesterol and blood pressure and things, these are all indicators of your heart.
Right.
Right. So why not just measure the heart directly? That's the thing. I don't give a shit if you have high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
If your heart's not working, it doesn't matter. Right. And conversely, mm-hmm. if your heart's working fine, yeah, you can have some extra fat. All right, you can have some all these other issues. As long as your heart's fine, you're fine.
That reminds me of... I don't always like his talks, but one that's really good is when Greg Glassman talked about, you know, oh, you're driving around in a speeding car, you take out a hammer, you break the speedometer, now you're not speeding anymore.
Right, right.
Like the Lipitor prescription or,
right,
right.
Oh, yeah. I've got high cholesterol, I'll just make it go down, or I've got high blood pressure, I'll make it go down with some medication, then yeah. my problem's gone.
Right.
Then yeah. I won't get cancer.
Yeah.
Fixing and Chris Work had that conversation problem. About you attack cancer.
Right.
Right.
But what if cancer is a thing that manifests because something else is wrong?
Right.
And if
right.
you treated that, you wouldn't get the cancer.
Right.
Or you'd at least get a whole lot less of it.
Yeah.
That kind of thinking, I think, is super duper powerful.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. maybe if you ever ate a vegetable, you wouldn't get so much cancer. Like why spend,
right.
I think about every time I see really complicated, I actually talked about this with Webb Smith, who yeah. works at St. Jude Children's Hospital.
Uh-huh.
This exercise specialist. It sometimes strikes me as odd that we'll put billions into research on a given problem.
Oh God,
cancer for sure, but also heart disease and
everything.
Don't even
start me on
diabetes. Companies
are
spending lots of money on
oh
on chemical
God.
Warfare to fight back conditions. When I think it's great, we need it, but most of these people, a good chunk of them at least, it's fair to assume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm assuming, but this is a fair assumption that these people moved ever
mm.
and didn't eat Chick-fil-A biscuits for breakfast
mm-hmm.
and didn't eat Los Locos Doritos tacos for breakfast or for lunch. And they went home and didn't eat Pop-Tarts for dinner or whatever
right,
they eat.
Yeah.
And if they cared at all about being healthy, maybe that would cut into some of these disease rates.
Yeah.
If you ever ate a vegetable, most people don't eat.
Right.
Like we're worried yeah. about getting like our 20 servings a day. Like, oh
right.
man, it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
But
right.
That's our default. Like we know we should be doing it. We strive for a certain thing. One day you don't get your fish oil and you freak out about it. there are people who never eat a vegetable,
right?
Like not even a carrot. Like, oh, I don't eat carrots, bro.
So it's super funny. So during my, I was fortunate during my doctoral education, part of our program is we had to spend a semester in medical school. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in class with, I'm the only non-MD in this class.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through it and we get to the part on kidney and liver and all that stuff and all the renal stuff. And
this is a physiology class?
Yeah. This is medical physiology. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about diabetes. And they spend all, and you spend like a week going through all the medications and how they work and what they're doing for diabetes. And I'm in the back just wanting to slam my face off the table. And it's awesome because the guy actually teaching is a PhD, not an MD.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's probably got a little bit of your insight more than their insight.
Right. So he's going on and on and on. And then he finishes the whole week. Mm-hmm. Now keep in mind, when you're med school, this is the only thing you do. There's you don't take you take one class. This is all you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing my research. I'm in three classes at the time. But anyways, it's a week. That's a lot of information you get in a week. And he spends a week on all these drugs. And he gets to the end. And he goes, oh, by the way, there's actually one drug that does all of that. It's called exercise. And they all drop their pens. And they're like, what? And he's like, and he's like, we've known for decades the only thing that fixes diabetes and that works every time is exercise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it yet, also happens to fix a whole lot of this shit too.
Yeah, and but we've continued to pour billions into this diabetes research. But he's like, we know the answer. It's very, very clear, and it always works.
But Andy, so, you don't make any money by telling people to go for a walk.
Yeah, I know.
And that's you can't very, justify very a $500,000 a year physician salary by telling people to go walk. You got to give them drugs of some kind.
Yeah,
that's a sad thing. That's the thing that's always going to fuck our healthcare system. Yeah. That people just don't use common sense.
Right.
You go to a drug. Drugs like your last ditch effort once you've tried stuff.
It should be.
It's like people now who are obese and need to lose weight. Well, my first option, I guess I should get have my stomach stapled.
Right.
Have you? Oh, I've tried all the diet. What do you mean you tried diet? Well, I went on an all cabbage diet for a week and it didn't work.
Right,
so I want to have surgery. I want to have my stomach removed from my body.
Yeah.
crazy. It's crazy.
Come back to one point really quick on the leg strength VO2 max stuff. Again, like, it makes intuitive sense. So what we see is, or what they see, is to give you guys an idea, a normal college man who's kind of recreationally active will have a VO2 max. The number they'll give is like probably maybe about 40.
Mm-hmm.
What we see is once you get down past 20, you're pretty much in bed, right? You really can't function. You can't walk around. And so if you're walking around with the VO2 max of 25 and then you get sick, or one little thing goes wrong, all of a sudden you fall below that 20 criteria and you're screwed. So your chance of dying get really, really high or being really thin. But if you can get that number really high, then if something happens adversely, say you have a heart attack or a stroke maybe, that number comes down 20 points, you're still at 30. You're still in the safe zone. And so the higher you can get that number, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they actually went and they found out was for untrained people, your leg strength actually predicted about 80% of the VO2 max. And so, again, coming back to the point, if you want your heart to be healthy, you need to do some very heavy leg stuff. And if you want to look at that from an athlete perspective, if you're in an activity, say, that costs, that takes 3 to 12 minutes and is very, very tiring, one of the most important things you can do to get your heart better is to do maximal effort strength training. Because, it's, again, it's going to further your VO2 max. And so even when you're doing the VO2 max, say the whatever you're doing a WOD that takes 8 minutes. You need to train the 8 minute WOD, but you also need to do some things where you do one repetition or close to absolute maximal strength in the legs, because again, that's going to support further cardiovascular adaptations.
So you can't just do WODs all the time and METCONs all the time. You have to really focus on strength training outside of the METCONs.
Yeah, you need to do some things before you're tired, where you do something really, really heavy one or two or three times, stop, repeat 20 times. You know, at least once in a while, you know, preferably a couple of times a week at the minimum. But you need to spend time, again, not doing conditioning
and
all the time.
Break it away and have your WOD time separate, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the more separation you can actually put between the two, again, there's more data on that that suggests the more time you can put in between the conditioning and the strength training, the better off you are.
And that's what I love about one thing that we have learned scientifically is that there are certain things you need to do. There are parameters around those things. We haven't done a good job of figuring out what the best way of going about it is sometimes, but you know that there's ranges of loads that give you a certain type of stimulus, and there's a way to run to get better at running, a way to do short sprints to get better at doing short sprints. And if you want to get better at those things, you have to focus on those things and put them in a logical order, which is loosen up, get powerful, express strength, condition later.
Yeah, yeah,
and you can't really. It's like paying taxes and stuff. You can't really get beyond the fact that you need to do it like that. Mm-hmm. Now you can get creative within that.
Sure, absolutely.
But if you just if you have the mindset like I'm not gonna have any kind of planning to my training, I'm just gonna go in and do the wad that's on the board. I'm not gonna think about the sequence of it. I'm not gonna think about. I'll just get my squat training in there in the form of 200 reps.
Right.
That's not fitting the formula.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I liked the best about your strength DVD that you had. And I liked it so much, I actually had I had Chris come in and do a guest speaking engagement for my graduate class, which is these are master students getting a master's in strength and conditioning. And the class was an advanced periodization and program design class. And I liked it so much, his message. I had him give his strength seminar talk to the class. And what I liked is the fact that you just simplified it so much and you kind of just said, microcosm, what you just said was there are a few things you have to do. Outside of the way you get it, the methods are many, the concepts are few, right? That's something I know I stole from Doug. Mm-hmm. I use in class all the time. Mm-hmm. There's a few things you have to do right. The way you go about it, though, you can do it crazy as you want, but you have to do speed stuff. You have to do maximal strength stuff. You have to do it with a lot of rest, and you have to separate that from conditioning. It's one of the important things.
I love it. I love the fact that you can – there's a lot of different ways to approach, like you said, but if you look at people who are really impressive – you could do it running, but let's just talk strength. I mean, guys who are really strong, you know, those guys you see on YouTube doing incredible things, they all do a certain amount of things the same. Mm-hmm. They're all squatting a lot, and they're all pressing a lot.
Right.
Some of them are putting more focus on strongman lifts or powerlifting lifts or weightlifting lifts, but they're all doing – they don't overthink. They train very heavy. They make zero excuses. They do whatever it takes to train the way they need to train. There's some big clues for you to pay attention to if you want to get as strong as you're not gonna get as strong as those dudes, but you're gonna be very strong for what you want to achieve for sure.
I was with I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bud Charnega. I know you guys are, but sure. Audience guys.
Did he just growl the whole time you talked to him?
Yeah, of course. That's part of the best thing. What I tell people that don't know him, I'm like, just walk up to Bud and say, "Hey, Bud, what do you think about?" Then just stop and sit, because you're going to get some awesome, awesome stories.
What do you
like
think? Do you have the back squat, Bud?
Yeah. But one of the things that we were just yesterday, I was sitting there talking to him, and he said, this is how awesome Bud is. He goes...
Wait, so who's Bud real quick before we go on the conversation?
Bud Charnega is the guy that brings most of the weightlifting equipment into America. He's the one that translated all the Russian stuff into English. He's got a wonderful website, just Bud Charnega. Put that in the Googles. You'll find his website.
You can guess on Charnega over and over again until you get it right.
Yeah. C-H-A-R-N-I-G-A. Yeah, it's pretty simple. But he's the one that translated all the original Russian literature into English, and that's where you hear the Russian training program and all this, whatever. He's been coaching weightlifting and around the sport for decades. Mm-hmm. Very opinionated, very awesome guy to listen to. But he said, first thing out of his mouth, he goes, "Hey, 100-1, I'll give you." And I was like, all right, on what, Bud? And he said, I guarantee you every single Chinese lifter that medaled in the last games will bomb in the games this summer. And I was like, all right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
Now, he doesn't like all the variation, right?
Right. And so this is what I'm getting at is, and literally he pulls a $100 bill out of his hand.
That's a big, so far I'm thinking that's a really big bet.
He goes, I'll let you hold it. If I'm wrong, you mail it back to me. So I got a $100 bill sitting in my pocket. He just literally gives me a $100 bill. And he goes, I was like, all right, why? And he said, well, one of the best guys, I forget the guy's name, that won, I think, a silver last games. Mm-hmm. He said, I watched that kid and he had great legs, great glutes and stuff. And he had these tiny little wimpy girly arms. Mm-hmm. He said, now I just saw him 2 weeks ago. He's got these huge, big deltoids, big biceps, big chest. He said, they do too much variation. They're getting way too complex. They need to just lift. Then they're spending way too much time doing all this
other crap.
They
row a lot. They do a lot of assistance. They do knee extensions.
They do all kinds of things.
They do a wide array of pulls. I know Bud is not a big fan of pulls sometimes.
No, Bud's not a fan of anything that's snatch.
Audience, when I say
front squat.
When I say pulls, I mean when you do a lift that's a Olympic lift, but you're not – fully catching the bar. You're just basically exploding with your hips, and you sort of let the bar rise. You don't try to catch it. So
you don't
pull.
Do the most important part by catching it. Yeah.
Which I can't do. All I do is pulls, bro.
Yeah. So that's any funny story. He talked about the same thing. He had the same message, essentially.
We're going to find out soon whether you owe him $100 though, if you...
Well, I'm out of buck, I really. So all I have to do is mail him
his 100 back,
and I'll put an extra dollar in there, and I'll be fine.
You'll pay for a stamp, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I didn't factor that in. So really, he owes me like an extra 133, right?
But I don't know. I mean, those guys, some of the best videos on YouTube, if you just type in Chinese weightlifting,
yeah,
watch everything that comes. Those guys are so entertaining and so awesome.
Yeah.
Like the postures they keep and the shoulder flexibility and the squat jerking and everything is just so awesome. Yeah. I'm very curious now with that bet to see how they do.
Yeah, so am I actually. And he said the same thing about, I won't throw him under the bus, but he said the same thing about one of the American weightlifters. He guaranteed that he or her is going to bomb completely.
Well, that's not a big gamble. I'm more interested in the Chinese gamble.
Yeah.
But I say to myself, I followed the Russian training pretty close, and those guys are just monsters.
Yeah.
Well, I want to see what Klokov does. I want to see him crush his enemies, see them driven before him.
And Bud talked about that again, too. Where he's like, man, the absolute strength between those guys and our guys is by far, it's not that we're that much better technically, and we're not that much faster, but they are so much freaking stronger than we are. They spend way more time actually getting strong and not worrying about all this other junk.
Well, they are really strong in weightlifting positions. Like, the coolest thing I've ever seen, I watch it like once a week, is Klokov, their 105 plus, whatever.
Yeah.
He unracks 250 kilos, walks back, stands there for like 10 seconds, squats down, stays at the bottom with a single breath for like 10 seconds, and then speed squats it up.
Oh my God.
Speed squats it up.
550 pounds. That's one of the strongest things I've ever seen anybody do.
Yeah.
I can, like right now, in holding 300 pounds in a front squat position, just walking back and holding it for 10 seconds wouldn't be so fun all the time.
No.
This guy sits at the bottom, which is definitely not fun, and drives up effortlessly.
Yeah.
Hugely strong.
Once your technique gets to a certain point, if your front squat goes up, your clean and jerk goes up, snatch goes up.
Yeah.
And
no
if your front squat goes down, your clean and jerk and snatch goes down. Like my technique doesn't change that much anymore, really. But if I get stronger, my lifts go up. And if I lose strength, then my lifts go down.
Yeah, I think the real important thing is you got to get stronger. And like Glenn has said a lot, he's taken on the strength thing with American Weightlifting quite a bit. Because like Ripito will say, all you need to do is get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You get a bigger back squat. And he goes, it's really strength in weightlifting specific positions. And, oh, by the way, it's not like we're not trying to get strong. We're squatting 5 days a week. We're driving our lifts up.
Mm.
We're trying. But then the dumb thing is when you see people comment from outside of sport, like a powerlifter will say, oh, just get a bigger deadlift. Your clean will go up.
Well,
you don't understand what's going on here.
Yeah, different movement.
In fact, I've been actually working my weightlifting movements quite a bit.
Mm.
I've been trying to get better and comfortable snatching. My snatch pull and clean pull are getting pretty good. But one thing I notice is my deadlift already feels weaker. It's because, I scoop the bar to my thigh, then I pull hard.
Right.
And then a deadlift is pull really hard
from
the very get-go. And that's not how you clean. If you do that, you're not going to clean 300 pounds.
Yeah.
But if you lightly scoop to the thigh, then you explode, you're going to have a really good time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, people say, like Ripito has always been a fan of, I don't like speed deadlifts, you should just do cleans. Well, I don't necessarily think you understand what a double knee bend is.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Practical experience wise,
yeah, certainly don't understand the positioning as well. I mean, if your hips get out of position,
a clean is not a deadlift, and deadlift's not a clean, and
a
snatch is not a deadlift.
Certainly different positions.
Yep. All right, guys, we're going to cut it off right there. Brief plug for your Simple Strength product. Just give a quick rundown of what it is and what people can get out of watching it.
Yeah, I think if you ever feel any frustration about there's so much to learn, there's so much to get your head around. Even if you're an experienced coach, you still have some confusion about all these complicated things you see. I basically took my 20-plus year experience in trying to become better and stronger and all my research experience and everything else and boiled it down to a set of very simple ideas that touch on everything in a very refreshing, simple way. So you should check it out at Fitter. What is it? FITR.TV.
How do I know this better than you?
FITR.TV. And then I keep a blog over at the chrismoreblog.com. I got to post something today. It'll be funny.
There you go. All right. Thanks for watching.
I got to give me a chance. I can't plug anything.
You got something to plug? I didn't know you had
If you're interested in getting an education, come on out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually want to plug several things.
Okay.
Yeah. Number one.
Don't say your mom.
No. But I was going to say your mom. Ooh. I really want to actually support all the things Chris said. Both his DVD, again, it's fantastic. I use it in my class now, and I had him come talk to my class about the same thing. It's so good. As well as his blog, because it's just freaking hilarious. It's absolutely. And then I also want to make sure you guys pay attention to Doug's technique. That's something I use actually in my class. And by far and away of all the things I've done in class, that's got me the most positive reviews. A lot of times in textbooks and things, we talk about different exercises, and you can Google a billion different exercises, but what's lacking is really understanding when and why to choose that exercise. Students just don't get that information. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they know what an RDL is, they know what a good morning is, they know what a rear foot elevated split squat is. And then when I ask them, why did you pick the rear foot elevated split squat instead of just a split squat?
It looks cool.
It's a dead answer. And I think that's one of the things that your technique wad is really good about. And so I make them do that every week. They have to do three technique wads. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely love it. And they always wish that they could do that for the whole class. And then in addition to that, again, if you are interested in education and learning more about either muscle or performance stuff, we're certainly looking for good undergraduates at Cal State Fullerton, good grad students, all the stuff we've got, kind of a well-rounded sports psych, biomechanics, all this stuff, physical therapy, all that athletic training.
Go see Dr. Andy.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Speaking of technique WAD, the next one we're going to post, Mike McGolder hosted on double unders. That should be up here pretty soon.
Excellent.
And by the way, you gave your tips to Scott English, and he immediately crushed his double under. So I'd be very happy to see what you have to share. I know it works. So if you suck at double unders like I do, you need to check out what Mike's got to say.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for coming out.
Mike? Yes, thank you. New website up and running, mobilitykits.com. It's a small contraption I came up with. It's foam roller and an all-inclusive kit.
It's downstairs.
So foam roller has the end cap pop off, and inside comes a stick roller, a stretch band, and a peanut and lacrosse ball. Mm-hmm. And it all comes together to the kit. So if you're a traveling athlete, whether CrossFit or weightlifter or runner, fits in your gym bag, and it's just really nice to have. Check it out at mobilitykits.com.
All right, guys.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Did I mention weightlifting is the greatest thing in the history of mankind?
Agreed.
Okay.
That's a known.
You'll get all the girls. Every one of them.
Plus the endorsement money, all that stuff. Just super famous.
And your body won't be wrecked. Totally won't be wrecked.
Yeah, no, not at all.
We had
only if you compete in it.
Yeah.
Do we have to stop talking?
we're running out of batteries.
What do we do with our hands?
All right, guys. Thanks for coming out.
All right.
Yesterday, the games, you might have the world's first